The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and not those of Cedarbrook Community Church or Mountain View Community Church.
Hi, this is Stefan Vaz with Streetlights in Athens, Greece, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McKay.
And we're back. Episode 29, Youth Ministry Sherpas Podcast.
Hey, everyone. I'm Matthew McCabe.
And this is Steve Anderson. We are two guys from Maryland, two youth pastors who exist to help youth workers to keep going.
Thanks for joining us. Looking forward to another episode of goodness.
Well, we hope so.
Well, that's the plan anyway.
Yeah. So how you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there, doing well.
Good.
You know, we just got back from California. Last episode, we talked about the DYM conference in California, but I was in California for a full week prior to that.
Which is pretty awesome. You're wearing your Yosemite shirt today, which I love that. That's a sweet-looking hoodie,
man. It's a little retro. I like it. A little 80s
look. I love
the
colors, yeah.
Absolutely. Craig bought this for me for my birthday.
I was going to say, you didn't bring me one of those, did you?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
What's up with your partner? Didn't buy me a shirt?
Well, was it your birthday?
Okay,
fine. Anyway, so my buddy and I, we spent a week out in the Yosemite area. We actually did a 5-day, 4-night backcountry trip in Yosemite.
Before you talk about that, though, you were telling me about your friend out there.
Oh, my goodness.
How do you know these people?
This is a guy I went to.
You're connected to the jet set.
I can tell you what, this is a guy that I went to college with. He actually studied at Moody to be a missionary pilot, but then went into sales instead and has done really well for himself. He's doing well. And so, when we flew into San Jose, he picked us up in his Cessna airplane and drove and flew us up to his lake house. And we hung out there, which is only about an hour out of Yosemite. And we were hanging there with him and of course, all his friends who all
had a Cessna Uber, basically.
It was basically a Cessna Uber. It was absolutely amazing. And the lake house was awesome. And
is there a Cessna Uber app?
I don't think there is.
That would be the best thing.
Super.
You could have Cessna XL.
And then
just watch the flight of the plane as it comes closer
land
to you.
It was absolutely.
Your pilot today is?
Is.
Abdul.
Yeah. I mean, just a great guy, just a super great guy and super generous. And it was fun hanging and catching up on old college days. And
at his lake house.
At his lake house. We had a good time. And then, my buddy and I, we got our permits, we got our bear canisters, and we were off to the races. Had a good long hike planned. And
you were going to do Half Dome. Right?
Half Dome, yes. Yosemite. Half Dome. We were gonna climb Half Dome on the last day on our way out. Probably about 75 miles of hiking total over the 5 days.
Wow, that's a lot.
That was the plan. Yeah. Things did not go as they were planned. You know, we had a great first day at about a nice 10-mile hike up Yosemite Falls. It was pretty tough.
Do they ever go as planned?
No, they don't. Pretty tough sledding.
What if life goes as planned?
But we got up to the top of Yosemite Falls, 4,000 feet of elevation in like 3 miles. We were hurting, had some lunch, another 4 or 5 miles of hiking, just made a nice little campsite on the Lahamity Creek. Oh, it was just
sounds
beautiful.
Glorious.
Had ourselves some rehydrated chili mac for dinner. And then we made a fateful decision. It was both a good and a bad decision. We decided to go hike to a little place called North Dome, which is right across the valley from Half Dome. You feel like you can just reach out and touch Half Dome. It was a beautiful spot. We were going to watch the sunset. We were about 2 miles from it, from our campsite. So we hiked up, got there, and then we were going to watch the sunset, and we had our headlamps. We were just going to hike the trail back to the campsite. No problems, right?
Oh, yeah. You guys are backcountry experts. So hiking in the dark with your headlamps sounds like a great idea.
The last half mile of the hike, you come out of this trail in the woods, and now you're just on a shale rock face.
Yeah.
So the trail is very difficult to follow. You just kind of make your way, and we got there, and it was beautiful. Sunset was unbelievable. I mean, it was just breathtaking. But then just as the sunset, we thought, all right, let's get back to the trail in the woods before it gets really dark, just at dusk, so that then we could turn the headlamps on, and it'd be an easy hike back, no problem. Well, we lost the trail on the shale, on the rock. Just could not find the trail. And it's getting darker and it's getting darker. So we're like, all right, fine. Let's just get off the rock down into the woods and then we'll find the trail. We start wandering around and we are just
lost.
We're lost. We have no idea where we are. And of course, now it's dark.
Yosemite.
Now it's dark. So there's no points of reference. So whether you're going north, south, east, west, I mean, you just don't have any points of reference. So we are bushwhacking for about an hour. In the dark.
Were you starting to freak out a little bit?
About an hour into it, we both started having that kind of look in our eye like, we're in trouble. We're in over our heads here. We're a little overwhelmed because the likelihood now of just sitting down under a tree and waiting for light is becoming increasingly a possibility. And we knew that it was going to drop into the, I mean, it was beautiful weather. I mean, the daytimes were like mid-70s, sunny, just perfect. But it got down into the low 30s, high 20s at night. So without a adequate sleeping bag, and it would have been a very, very long night.
You guys would have snuggled up
together.
Oh, I don't know
about
that.
It would
have been so romantic.
Oh, my goodness. It would have been
college buddies.
Would have been a nightmare. It would have been a nightmare, Steve.
Just after your late nights out on the town in Chicago.
Yeah,
it would have
exactly.
been just like old times.
Yeah. So, so we're starting to freak out a little bit, starting to get a little overwhelmed. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to take a flyer here. And I pulled my phone out of my pocket, and I took it off of airplane mode. Because I had my phone on airplane mode, because there's no signal. I don't want the battery to die. I want to be able to take pictures. But I take it off of airplane mode thinking maybe just if everything's right, I might have a bar of service, and I could get a map. I could pull maps up and try to orientate ourselves. Where are we and where are we going? I had two bars of LGE 3G service.
That's awesome.
There's a Verizon commercial in this somewhere. I got to tell you that. I might try to sell them this story. But we were able to figure out where we were, which was very far from where we were supposed to be. We were way off track. But then we were able to orientate ourselves, and we were able to kind of get going. And it was another hour to hour and a half of bushwhacking. But at least we were moving in the right direction. We made our way to the origination of the creek that we were camped on, and then just turned north and figured if we keep hiking, we're going to find our campsite. And sure enough,
we did.
But I mean, it came with
pretty dicey for a few minutes.
It was dicey for a little
bit.
I was definitely a little overwhelmed, a little like, I'm not sure how this is going to turn out. And it ended up turning out okay. And we had wonderful time in Yosemite. It was great.
Thank God for GPS, man.
I tell you what.
Isn't that the most incredible invention?
I just want to hug the Verizon guy. I want to hug the Verizon guy now. Every time I see a commercial, I just want to hug him.
You're probably the only person who ever wants to hug the Verizon guy.
Probably. But anyway.
That's a pretty cool story. So
yeah.
You were pretty overwhelmed and lost and didn't know if you'd find your way out.
That is correct.
So that's what we want to talk about for a few moments today.
Because I would imagine, as a youth worker,
there have been times when you've been overwhelmed and lost and didn't know how you were going to find your way out.
Exactly.
Right?
There's a couple different ways that can happen.
Yeah. There's the busyness of the job and all the incredible diversity of responsibilities that we have. There are moments where we feel like, I don't know what to do next. There's so much to do.
Yeah.
You been in that place?
Oh, I've been in that place. Absolutely. I've been in that place many times. And I think
daily.
Not only that, though, but even just at its core, the job description, what we're supposed to do to influence the spiritual direction of 11 to 17-year-olds, I'm overwhelmed.
It's like being a cat herder, pretty much.
I'm overwhelmed just thinking about what it is they actually hired me to do at this church.
Imagine you were a shepherd and you were expected to train the sheep to do tricks.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
They're not going to listen to you.
Exactly.
Well, that's the way it is in student ministry.
It can be. And that can be overwhelming.
It is, yeah.
And again, not to mention what you talked about, which is just the never-ending responsibilities, the events that have to be run, the programming that needs to be planned, the teachings that need to be studied for, the emails that have to be responded, the parents who have to be calmed, and whatever else.
We did an episode, I don't remember which one it was, it's been a while, called Hats.
Just the many different hats we wear
in youth ministry. And there are usually a couple seasons in the year, maybe fall, maybe spring, I don't know. Depends on your context, but a couple seasons of the year where I look at my list of things to do, and I think, I'm done, I'm lost. I don't even know how to get started on this. There's so much responsibility.
Have you ever run an event that sort of got away from you where you got yourself a little overwhelmed?
Yeah. In fact, I learned from it and never did it again.
Okay.
It's the last lock-in I ever did.
Oh, which is actually a wise choice.
Yes, it grew into
the Sherpas are against lock-ins,
FYI. We are
FYI.
Officially against lock-ins.
Yes, we're taking a stance.
Yes, we are. And you can hate on us for it. We don't care because we hate lock-ins. So the last lock-in I did got pretty out of control. Too many kids in this big space. I spent time just chasing them. You know, they're looking for corners to smoke cigarettes in. It's just, you know, just don't want to do that. More kids than I can handle, and
sure.
Fewer leaders than required to handle the number of kids. Bad choice. Yeah. How about you?
Because what leader wants to do a lock-in? What volunteer leader wants to do a lock-in?
None in their right mind.
No, exactly.
Oh, they'll never do a second one.
That's true. Which is why you stopped doing
them. Because they'll be dead.
Exactly.
6 feet under.
Yeah, I remember we ran an event once during a reverse mission trip. We brought a group of kids from Peru that we typically work with to our church, and we decided to do service projects around our area. And I thought, hey, let's do a block party. Let's invite the neighborhood over. I was trying to find, you know, we were trying to find meaningful things for this group of people to do. And so, the block party was like a 2-day event because we got to go around and invite everybody. So we got to go hang door hangers all over the neighborhood and then do this. And I thought, maybe, you know, 150 or 200 people will come to this thing and it'll just be a win. It'll be great. And so that's what we planned on. But we put door hangers on 4,500 homes. And so the day of the event comes and everything's set up. We're all set to go. We've got everything we need for a block party for 250 people. And yeah, this is going to be great. Until about 800 people showed up at this block party. And I'm throwing money at kids and saying, you got to go down to the grocery store and buy more prizes and candy. And you need to go get more donuts. And you need to go. And then I got kids.
Go to 7-Eleven, buy every hot dog on that roller right now.
Oh, my goodness. And then I got kids that were helping to park people, you know, because we used the parking lot to set the block party up. So we were parking them on the grass and everywhere else at the church. And I got high school kids out there parking. And I got kids coming in going, there's 15 cars in line. There's no more spots. Somebody just bumped another car. We got an accident down there. I mean, within a half an hour, this thing just got out of control, and I was just standing there completely overwhelmed going, I'm going to lose my job.
And so he just walked away. And
I just
everything
left.
Just,
I left.
Yeah, figured it out later. Let everyone else take care of it. That's what I would have done.
It all worked out in the end, but it was a rough night.
Yeah.
And a rough couple days after trying to put out all the fires that were started by the overwhelmingness of it.
Overwhelmed and lost because something did really well. That's a good place to be.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah. But there are other times when things aren't so good and you're lost and overwhelmed and it's painful to be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when you're carrying burdens of people's pain, that's a tough place to be.
It's a very tough place to be, but it's a place that as a youth pastor, youth worker, you find yourself far more often than you want to.
Do you know of things going on in families in your church that you wish you didn't know?
There is so much that I know that I wish I didn't know. There are people I have a hard time looking in the eye as I see them on a Sunday because I know what's going on behind closed doors. I know what's going on behind the smiles and the dressing up on Sunday and the presentation of we're just one happy family, knowing that it's just not true. And I get overwhelmed carrying some of that information.
Just too much information.
Yeah.
I mean, not in the funny sense, TMI. It's legitimately too much information for us to really be able to comprehend and handle. It feels burdensome.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on top of that, a lot of times you're just aware of burdens that 14-year-olds have to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And if me as a grown adult am having a hard time carrying something that's not even mine, it's their burden, and I just got to kind of carry it, I think, what is their life like to have to live in that every day?
Yeah. It can be really heavy for us.
Super
heavy.
Just
thinking about that.
I'm overwhelmed, and I'm not even the one living in the situation. What are they going through? And I get overwhelmed for them.
The difference between being the pastor and being the person struggling is we are hearing that about multiple situations. So we have a whole bookshelf full of stories and problems and, you know, black holes of relational difficulties and stuff that we have to kind of deal with every day. And sometimes I just think, I don't want to hear another story of a messed up situation or a broken family. I just can't handle any more.
Right. Do you ever find yourself at a loss for words?
Oh.
When you're talking to the people that are carrying, that are in the midst of that chaos.
There's often no words to even say. I mean, we talked last episode about those frayed edges, those places where you just don't have answers. And a lot of these situations, you know, you have maybe a parents of a kid are getting divorced and there's all kinds of issues. Like how do you figure out what the real issue is? You know, you have students struggling with all kinds of personal issues, anxieties and discouragements and depression and, you know, addictions and all kinds of things. And like, I don't really have the answers for this. Like,
right.
I know Jesus is the answer, but how do I help you today deal with this? And it's too much to bear.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you get in some of the, especially some of those family dynamics.
Oh,
so you're
going to
get pulled into this situation and you're going to hear from the student and what they're going through and what their perspective on it. And then you're going to hear from mom, then you're going to hear from dad. And you, what's the right perspective? Well, they're probably all the right perspective in some regards, but how do you, as the youth worker, make sense of it?
How do you know what the truth is sometimes?
I get lost in trying to figure out what's my place here.
Mm-hmm.
What's my place here? What do I do?
Something that is helpful, I think, to just be able to continue on, like, because you can't just lay down and bury yourself.
You can't just curl up in the fetal position.
That's what I want to do some days, is really to be able to kind of compartmentalize it. I know that sounds terrible, but to be able to say, I know I can't do any more for this situation right now, so I need to now turn my attention back to everybody else.
Whatever
my
else
own family
is going on.
Or my responsibilities, and be able to just kind of set that aside and not let it completely wrestle you to the ground moment by moment.
Right.
That's hard.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Because then there are other times where you have to jump back into that compartment.
Yeah.
Because you need to help that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, one of the things I've learned over the years that is helpful, not perfect, and I don't do this perfectly, is understanding one of my significant roles, I think, in that moment is to help them, not fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't fix it.
Right.
The world is too complicated and too broken for me to just be able to fix it. So I need to say, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
How can I help this person in this moment? And it makes it more manageable.
It's a bite-sized piece
What's one thing I can do that can help right now? Not what's 10 things I can do to almost fix it.
Right.
It's what's one thing that I can do. And that's helped me be, I'm not going to say not overwhelmed, less overwhelmed, less lost.
So if you're in youth ministry as, you know, a young person just getting started and you haven't had experience wrestling all these deep, heavy issues, it's definitely going to feel overwhelming to you. I just want to encourage everyone listening that we are not the answer. We are not the solution. We are just a voice, and we can't carry everybody's burdens to their full extent. It's not possible. So give yourself a break.
Yep.
Yeah. There's another level of lostness and overwhelmness, though, that takes it to a whole different degree.
Oh, this is like whole new level stuff.
Yeah.
That's pretty difficult to avoid.
Yeah, the youth ministry tragedy.
When you get called in to the midst of just an absolute tragedy.
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple times. I've had the phone call. I had a phone call with the suicide of one of our students, very beloved student. And I still remember getting the call. Actually, my wife got the call. It was a Monday morning. I had seen that student the night before. I mean, literally seen that student less than 12 hours ago.
Mm.
My wife gets a phone call, and she comes in and tells me, and I just collapsed. I just collapsed on the floor, just like total mess. But then I had to pick myself up, and I had to go to the house. There's nothing, I've never done a harder thing than get in a car and drive to that house.
Sure.
It was brutal.
Because what are you going to do? What are you going to say?
What are you going to say? There's nothing. I've been to seminary. I've been in ministry for a long time. Hopefully God speaks to me and, you know, helps me through moments. I had nothing. I had no idea what to do. So I just drove to the house. I walked in. I cried. I hugged people. We talked about how to inform students and how to help everybody else process it. But, man, there's no preparation for that moment.
No.
Nothing.
And you can easily just be overwhelmed by it and lost in it.
And you're going to be.
100%.
Expect to be.
Yeah.
I've done that 2 times since. Did it for a friend of mine whose husband, who was also a friend of mine, passed away suddenly at age 36. Had to walk into her house at midnight on a Saturday night.
So you've done it multiple times. Is it get easier?
Oh, my gosh. I dread the next one.
Right.
I dread the next one. There's going to be another one because it's ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen.
Yep.
And I just, it's overwhelming and just confounding.
Yeah. I remember I had that happen as well. A middle school that our church serves, you know, that a lot of our students go to, and actually my own kids went to that middle school. Mm. A sixth grade boy went missing. Mm-hmm. For the better part of a week. You know, nobody could locate him, and there was all this crazy stuff going on. And then they found him murdered by his own father, who had just gotten out of prison.
Oh, my gosh.
And so then that wasn't – then they informed the school and the middle school and all the families. And I remember the school called me, you know, just because just of my position in the community as well as a parent. Mm. And just said, can you call one of your other youth pastor friends from this area? And can you guys come here? Mm. And can you help our students process this? And can you help our staff process this? And
of course, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm fully equipped, fully equipped for this moment. I've got all the answers. I'll be right there.
I remember thinking,
to save the day.
No, sorry, I have a staff meeting I have to go to. Right. No, I mean, you have to say yes. And then you say yes. And then you get in the car and you start driving and you think, what the heck did I just say yes to?
Yeah.
Can I help you process that? No, I don't think I don't know that I can. I'll never forget as long as I live what it felt like to drive from my office
to drive
10 minutes to drive to that school thinking, what am I going to do or say? And in retrospect, the reality is they didn't call me to solve it. They didn't call me they just said, we need help.
We need presence.
We need presence. And so I was able to go. And another youth pastor friend of mine, we were able to go and we were able to provide presence. I don't think we said anything profound that day or in the days that followed. I don't think we helped anybody just go, oh, I never thought about that. But we were there. And I was the whole time I was lost and overwhelmed.
I'm thinking about, I've done 3 funerals that were tragic funerals. And in each case, there's a moment where I was in the car driving to the house.
Yeah.
And those 20 minutes, those 40 minutes, whatever it happened to be, are 40 of the most horrific, overwhelming, just feeling completely lost moments that I've ever had. There's nothing else that compares to that because you're anticipating walking into a situation that you have nothing to give. There's nothing that you can do that's going to fix a situation. You are walking into a tragedy that's already been completed and it's awful.
Right. But without trying to oversimplify or over-spiritualize this, in any of these cases, whether it be just being overwhelmed by the job and the responsibilities and the events, whether it be being overwhelmed by carrying the burdens of other people's messes and problems, or whether it be being called in to the midst of tragedy, we don't have the answer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the fix.
We don't have the preparation.
We don't have the preparation.
Or the knowledge or the expertise.
But we serve a God who's the only hope in those situations.
Yeah. And he's prepared us, I think, uniquely, especially if you've been in a place for a while. He's prepared us to be God's person for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
When I did the last tragic funeral that I did was just, uh, I guess it's been a year and a half now. And it was a unique situation. It was a former student who died of an overdose. I was friends with the family, but that student grew up with my son and was one of his best friends for a long time through middle school and high school, and came to our youth ministry as a result of that friendship. And so I was grieving in that. My friends were grieving in that. My family was grieving in that. But the relationships and my position in the midst of those relationships, I was the only one who could have done that funeral and provided that need at that moment, because God had prepared me for that through those relationships. And I remember thinking, I can't do this. I remember getting dressed for the funeral thinking, I can't do this. I don't know. I'm going to break down. How am I going to do this funeral? Hundreds of people from the community for this young man with his family sitting there, and I'm grieving too. How am I going to do this? And afterwards, making it through, God carrying me through that moment, and my wife saying to me, you're the man for this. God's prepared you for this. So even though you feel like you've got nothing, you've got God who's prepared you for this specific moment. So go and trust him.
Absolutely.
That's the only way you can get through.
I think it's the only way. I mean, being overwhelmed and being lost, it's not going to go away. But realizing, and I think your story is just perfect, and I think we should stop talking now because I think that's the answer, is that that God prepares you for those moments, you know, that you are the person based on your position. You might not feel like it. You might not think you have any of the answers, but you're the person that God has put in that moment, in that place, to help people see him.
Yeah.
And so to trust that, to trust when you don't have the answers, that God will see you through it. And I know that sounds like a spiritual platitude, but it's reality.
It's the only way you can get
through it. It's the only way you can get through it.
Yeah. God is the ultimate source of everything and of strength in the moments of our greatest weakness. So,
absolutely. Yeah. So take him into that situation and know that he made you for that moment.
Yeah. And you're not going to feel like you're ready, but you will be.
You will be.
So we hope that's encouraging. That's pretty heavy stuff. They're
pretty heavy.
Started with you almost dying in the woods.
Yeah.
Somehow you survived.
Yeah.
So we survived these moments. I'm sure there'll be another one. It'll be terrible. I don't look forward to it. But we pray for you. You know, wherever you're at right now, maybe you're in the midst of one of these situations right now, and you're thinking, how am I ever going to get through this one? Or maybe you have so many broken people in your life that you feel like you're carrying a pack of, you know, 85 pounds of mess, and you don't know what to do. But you can make it through.
Yep.
And that's what youth ministry is. It's trudging through with God and lifting us up and being in the right place at the right time.
And trusting that he put you there for a reason.
Yep.
He made you the way he made you, and he put you in that situation so that you can help carry those burdens for those people, and he'll give you the strength to do it.
Yep. Well, we hope that this podcast was what you needed today. As you listened to it, we hope it was an encouragement to you. And if it was, we are just really blessed. We're able to help you.
And we look forward to being back with you again next week. But in the meantime,
Sherpas out.